Hello, this is the Field of Remembrance outside Westminster Abbey in London. And there it is, Westminster Abbey, built by Edward the Confessor, over 1,000 years old. Not that much of his original. This front part is mostly Victorian and a site of various royal events, coronations, most of them from Edward the Confessor onwards, indeed, including Charles III, some royal weddings, that of William and Kate Middleton, for instance, some funerals, for example, the funeral of Her Britannic Majesty Elizabeth II. But anyway, in early November, they turned into the Field of Remembrance. It started in 1928, so 10 years after the First World War, the First World War being the bloodiest war the United Kingdom has ever fought, in both absolute as well as relative terms. Obviously, the United Kingdom as such has only existed since 1707. So 300 separate plots, depending on the military unit, and people can place a little wooden cross, perhaps with a name of their loved one on it, someone who was killed in one of the wars from the First World War up until the present day. Fortunately, the United Kingdom is not fighting anywhere at the moment. So the Royal British Legion is a veterans organisation for those who are in the Army, the Royal Navy, the Royal Air Force, or the Royal Marines. And this is part of the poppy appeal. So these poppies, they're because of John McCrae, that Canadian Army doctor, wrote that poem in Flanders Fields. I mean, I shan't try quoting it, because I won't get it right, but you know, in Flanders Fields, here we lie row on row beneath the sky and so forth. And you see names written on there, because Flanders is southern Belgium, where many of the crucial battles of the First World War were fought. Some of them have got little commemorative messages there. That they want their comrades to carry on. We are the dead. The dead are speaking to the living. And to carry on, otherwise they will not sleep easy in Flanders Fields. You see Royal British Legion, Duke of Lancaster's regiment. But since there were lots of Powell's battalions and so on in the First World War, the deal was, look at this, Royal Regiment of Fusiliers, as in fusil, rifle in French. Because rifles are different from muskets, because they were rifled, as in they were, turned inside. The bullet came out spinning, it wasn't a musket ball, it was actually bullet-shaped, was straighter, went further, a bit like spin passing a rugby, than a musket. So they came in the early 19th century. Corps of Royal Engineers and so on. But where was I? Perhaps I won't announce all the units, because then I won't get on with my speech. He was killed towards the end of the war, John McCrae. And obviously it was the British Empire was fighting back then. There's now the Commonwealth of Nations. It's somewhat replicated elsewhere. So Earl Haig, Field Marshal Douglas Haig, he started this this poppy appeal. And on the back of these poppies, they're made out of plastic and wood, it'll say Earl Haig Fund. So he's ennobled with the title Earl Haig. But he refused to accept any peerage or any emolument from the government until such time was something was done for the veterans. So people donate money to pay for all the disabled veterans. There are people who are blinded, who are deafened, who were quadruple amputees, who were paralysed from the neck down, as well as the terrible psychological damage they had. Shell shock, they call it. We'd now recognise as post-traumatic disorder, having flashbacks or turns all the time, see things that reminded them these horrific scenes that they witnessed, and so on. So they had to be probably provided for. The Prime Minister, towards the end of the First World War, was David Lloyd George, the Welsh wizard, who vowed there'll be homes fit for heroes. Well, that definitely didn't transpire. And there was mass unemployment, there's demobilisation. The British Army had swelled to 4 million soldiers. I was talking about Powell's battalions. So they tried to get people to volunteer. There was no conscription until January 1916. But they said, if you join as a group, you will stay as a group. That'd be more alluring than being thrown into a unit with people you didn't know and you might hate. So like there was the sportsman battalions, one of the sports teams. Is it the Hull sportsmen, the Hull to others, as in the others, the not the sportsmen, and so on. They liked that. The trouble was, if one unit took very heavy casualties, there was often a very narrow geographical area bore the brunt of that. So it could be devastating to a village or a small town because they lose such a high percentage of their manpower rather than spreading the pain. And there's some thankful villages, as in villages where not a single person was killed in the First World War. There was mass unemployment after the First World War. It never fell below 10% all through the 1920s. That's why there's a book about it by Lord Skidelsky, Politicians and the Slump. So often they tend to be unemployed, and the government had spent so much on the war, was hugely in debt, was that I think over $1 billion, that seems like nothing, but of course in those days that was far, far more than it was now. Bear in mind that the United Kingdom was a creditor nation, not a debtor nation. I mean, there was some national debt at that point. It had really, really got in deficit financing. Look at the huge RAF wreath. So laying these wreaths here. Anyway, the RAF was founded as such on the impropitious date of April Fool's Day 1918. Before that, there'd been the Royal Flying Corps. And look at these more recent conflicts, Afghanistan, Iraq, Falklands, Borneo. That's that island is partly Malaysia, partly Indonesia, partly Brunei. So Malaysia became independent in 1957, but then there's the Konfrontasi with Indonesia, where Indonesia claimed that it all belonged to them, the whole island. And Malaysia was this fledgling country, and the British Army there was to deter the Indonesians. It wasn't an actual war, but some people did get killed. Aden, as in that's Yemen, they used to call it South Arabia at the time, Suez, Cyprus, and so on. Kenya, Korea, Malaya, obviously it's now Malaysia, Palestine, right after the Second World War. And the various units, the Coldstream Guards, the Irish Guards, is the Brigade of Guards, and they spend most of their time guarding the royal family. And look at their motto, on y soit qui mal y pense. Shame on who thinks badly of it. That garter of when the lady's garter fell down and King Edward III, if I got that right, gave it back to her, founded the Order of the Garter. So shame upon him who thinks badly of it. If you think it's a lascivious gesture that I pick up this lady's garter and return it to her, that is a disgrace on you, not on me, because I wasn't doing it to seduce her. Okay? And look at this, quis separabit. So that's the motto of the Irish Guards. Who shall separate us? As in, it's from a quotation from the New Testament. Who shall separate us from the love of God? Curious regiment, perhaps a regimental motto. And look, the Leek, as in the Welsh Guards, as in the Welshmen fighting in the Leek Garden at the Battle of Crecy in France. I can't tell you the actual dates. The early in the Wars of the Roses. Nemo me impune lacessit. Nobody wounds me with impunity. The motto of the Scots Guards is, if you hit me, I'll hit you back. So they got the thistle because of the Battle of Largs against the Norwegians, when the Norwegians tried to creep up on the Scots in the dead of night, but a barefoot Norwegian trod on a thistle and he shrieked in agony, and that alerted the Scots. The Norwegians lost the element of surprise and lost the battle, okay? And again, on y soit qui mal y pense, the Grenadier Guards, and so more of them. Okay. But anyway, since the First World War, there have been cutbacks and cutbacks and amalgamating more and more regiments and options for change in the early 90s. And about 20 years ago, even more regiments amalgamated. Now the Royal Regiment of Scotland, for example, the Royal Highland Regiment, commonly known as the Black Watch, they're no longer a distinctive unit, and so that's it. Okay. Oh, and there, look at the motto of the Royal Army Air Corps, wherever you go, whatever you do, and glory leads. Okay. As in, glory leads them, I suppose, yeah, because leads them there. And the Parachute Regiment, the Paris, they're commonly called, meant to be the most ultra-aggressive unit, the Artist Rifles, as in that was a special unit of the First World War, and it was just what it sounds like, painters and so on. And there we go on. And that's the emblem of the British Army, the lion, the two swords above the crown. I'll head out now. They take these down in a while, because remember, it's Sunday, it was a little while ago, the nearest Sunday to the 11th of November, as in, because the armistice took effect on the 11 o'clock in the morning on the 11th of November 1918. So that's it. And, you know, buses used to stop in the street. It was much more relevant to people because so many people had suffered losses in their family. So Ireland, they were part of the United Kingdom at the time, the whole of Ireland, we were exempt from conscription. Likewise, Irish-born men are living in Great Britain. If you're born in Great Britain, but to one or two Irish parents, no, you are still liable for conscription. And there was an attempt to bring it in, but never happened. Even in Northern Ireland after partition, Northern Ireland still part of the United Kingdom, no conscription. That's it, the Field of Remembrance, but they'll take them down quite soon. I always think it's apposite that this somber occasion falls in a somewhat dark time of year. Right, that's enough from the Gardens of Remembrance outside Westminster Abbey in London. Goodbye.